Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger. He's a registered home inspector. He focuses on sustainable renovation and restoration. He's with us every couple of months to talk about home projects and repair, and I hope you'll join in as we talk with John. I'm going to talk about how to plan for home improvement projects to kind of ensure a successful outcome, and of course, we'll take your home improvement questions as we move along, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And John Freiberger, welcome back.
Glad to be with you, Larry.
I tell you what, spring can be a popular time to dig into home improvement projects. So how do we make sure we do the proper planning first?
Well, we probably would have started 6 months ago, but not everybody did. So what I thought about last week, Larry, is I always like to write up a little something for your program. And it makes me think a little bit, too. You know, if I'm going to tell people I'd be organized, I better be organized. So what I did is I put together a little list for myself. If I were a homeowner and I was planning on doing something to my house, how would I approach it? So the first thing, I mean, we all have goals for our house. We have something that needs to be done. You know, maybe the siding is pretty bad and we want to replace it, or we want to replace the windows, or the roof is getting bad and we want to replace the roof, or maybe we want to put an addition on the house. And it is very important to know exactly what your goals are, but also to realize that your first goal is not going to be your entire goal. And to figure out what your entire goal is, you need to figure out all of the work that's going to be included in that project. Now, some of them are relatively simple, but some of them aren't. And when you do your work, you don't want to preclude easily doing future work. So you don't want to do something, you know, close up something or open up something where something else is going to need to be done in the future. So you need to think about those things so you really have a complete picture about what you're doing. And we need to think about money. You know, there's this thing called mobilization costs. You know, every time you have the plumber come to your house, it's basically $50 to ring the doorbell. So if you need your toilet replaced, but the sink's also leaking, well, you're going to do those both at the same time because you know that's going to save some money. The plumber only has to drive over once. Well, larger projects are the same thing. We want to get as much done as we possibly can with a limited number of what we call mobilizations. That is the guys showing up, unpacking their tools, and going to work. So the question is, we got to figure out this goal situation. So how do we do that? So you really need to understand how your house operates. And, you know, it's funny. We don't think of our houses as big, complicated machines, you know, like our cars. But a house is even more complicated than a car. There's a lot of parts. So we've got to know how the insulation works, the venting, the HVAC, the plumbing. And all these things share space inside the house, and how do they relate to each other? The other thing I suggest to people is have – maybe you're just thinking about changing the windows – but have a long-term vision or wish list for your house. In fact, if I inspect a house for somebody, Larry, I say, okay, let's talk about a 5-year plan, maybe a 10-year plan, but also an immediate plan for the things that are hazardous. And let's make sure you've got a vision of what you want this house to look like 10 years from now. Then you're able to prioritize things and put your energy and your money where it is best used.
And then you've got, I mean, there's so many different, I mean, you could put a new kitchen in. Maybe it's adding some rooms, or maybe it's how do I cut my utility bills, or how do I make it easier to maintain the darn house?
Right. All of those things come into it. Now, I wrote up one real short example that something that I run into a lot, because as you know, I really like to design air barriers and thermal barriers to make old houses more efficient. And we found that we can cut energy use in some houses 40-50%. So here's just a real quick example. So let's say, Larry, that you've got a 1938 house and it's sort of leaky and your utility bills are pretty high. Plus you get ice dams. And then when you look up in the attic in January, there's frost all over the place. So what do? You just throw some insulation in? Well, no. Now, you and I, every single program, we talk about having an energy analyst come over. And, of course, that's the first thing you do. And your energy analyst comes and she tells you, well, Larry, you have so much airflow through your attic that just adding the insulation is not going to do much. She also points out that you've got this old brick chimney and there's this big gap between the chimney and the framing where all the warm air is coming up from the basement in the winter because they didn't want the chimney dead tight to the framing to cause a fire. And you also know that that chimney above the roof looks just terrible and you're thinking of spending $4,000 or $5,000 to rebuild it. Now, your energy person also notices a bunch of old electrical cable under the insulation, and you probably need to get rid of that. So now all of a sudden, life has gotten really complicated. All we wanted to do was add some insulation, and now we're dealing with an old chimney. Well, to get rid of the old chimney, maybe we also have an old furnace or an old water heater, but if we side vent those, we can get rid of the chimney. So then we can get rid of the air leak, plus we can get rid of the chimney maintenance. But then we need to air seal, but we've also got these electrical wires. So do we suck all the insulation out of the attic? Well, maybe. So the electrician can come in and do his work. And then we want to air seal with a spray foam. Then finally, the thing you wanted to do originally, we get to put in more insulation. So your life has gotten very complicated. You're dealing with an HVAC system, a chimney system. You're dealing with air sealing. You're dealing with insulation, all because you just wanted to have a little less heat loss through your house. So you see how things sort of build on each other.
I've had experiences like that, John.
I know you have.
One house or another. Oh, my goodness me. Well, Vivian in Door County has a question for you. Let's go there. Vivian, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you. My husband and I started trying to repair a very old front porch deck surface and decided to redo the whole thing, which we did last year towards the end of the summer. And we had to let the wood age for about 3 months, we were told, which we did. I think four or five months. And then sanded it with a belt sander. And I applied a gray tinted oil stain. And I thought I was being really careful, but I've got parts where there's more stain, thicker than others, you know, and thin in other places. What I want to know is, do I have to re-sand the whole surface and start over, or can I somehow spot correct it?
Well, it depends on how good you are. And it depends. This is a layering type of stain, a latex, but no, you said it was oil-based, so it shouldn't be a layering type. So I'm a little surprised because usually an oil stain on sanded, dried, treated wood works pretty well. So I think you may be able to try second coating and feather into those areas where it's a little too dark and try to put a little more stain where it's a little too light, because that is a lot of belt sanding. It's a great deal of work. And you may end up with the same sort of situation, because this wood dried for 3 or 4 months may still have areas that were wetter. And if this is a southern treated pine, which is what treated wood usually is, there's areas where that wood is simply denser and it takes stain differently. The other thing I would probably do is talk to somebody up in Door County. It's probably a paint store or something in Sturgeon Bay, where there is a person my age that actually knows a whole lot about stain. And maybe make a call down there, see if you can find, not a big box store, but you know, a real paint shop, Sherman Williams, PPG, Glidden, whatever you have there, or even a hardware store where somebody knows something. Send them a picture and say, what would you recommend? And you've got an oil stain, so another oil stain is going to work over the top of it. So get a little bit of professional advice. I've seen the type of problem you describe, not really horrendously, And the other thing to think about is maybe let it age a little bit this summer before you put the second coat on. So get some professional advice from a good paint dealer and see if we can avoid all that hard sanding. Make sense?
Yes, it does. Yep. And, you know, you said how good I am. Well, actually, I'm an artist, and so I thought I was thinking maybe I could feather it. And so I'm going to try that first, but I'm going to wait several months until the middle of the summer and then try it.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I really like to see treated wood dry for a year before we put a stain or a latex paint over the top of it. So because it is pressure treated, we inject water into it to take the treatment into the wood. It can take a while to dry out, especially if it's like on the north side of the house. South side where, or west or east where the sun hits it is better. But if we have something on the north side, we have to be really careful about getting our wood dry.
Vivian, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us at ideas@wpr.org. John in Lake Mills wondered if you could discuss gutter leaf guards. Do they work? Are they worth the investment? Are some better than others?
The answer to all of that is yes. They work. Sometimes they work best on houses with low pitch roofs. What we're finding is like a Cape Cod or something, or a house that has a high pitch on it. The worst one of all is always the Gothic Revival with a 1512 pitch. When we get really heavy rain, what tends to happen is the water shoots right over the top of the leaf guard if it's the helmet type. I know there's also screen types. So the problem with leaf guards is to make sure that they actually manage water so the water goes into the gutter. So your roof type is going to make a difference there. As far as which of the types work better, I really don't know. I have seen various types work, and I've seen various types not work. So the geometry of your roof, I think, really makes a big difference. And the type, pine needles are very different than maple leaves. So do a little bit of research before you buy them. I wouldn't discourage you unless you've got very, very steep roofs. Then I think you may not have a good success with the leaf guards.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. Again, you can join us 1-800-642-1234. Let's take another call. Tony in Beloit, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Tony.
Hi, good morning. I had a pruning question. My daughter owns a bungalow down in Chicago, and I was down there a couple weekends ago, and they had a sewage back up into their tub. When the Roto-Rooter guy came out, some of the water from the pipe had seeped through the walls. Does that mean the pipes are bad? Should they be replaced? Or he mentioned that those pipes weren't meant to hold water, but just to whisk it away.
Well, I don't want to go replacing sewer pipes, which is a very expensive deal. Without doing a little bit of studying. And fortunately, there are a lot of people who can study that now, both various sewer companies and also home inspectors who have sewer cams. So what your daughter wants to do, Tony, is talk to a local sewer cleaner or plumber that has a sewer cam, or check with local building inspectors, because many of them are now doing sewer inspections. But we actually want to get images from inside that sewer. Now, if it's a Chicago bungalow, it may be 100 or 120 years old, and most pipes last 100 years, so it's possible if there's a problem. It is not going to be because of that one-time sewage backup. But it's nice to know the age of your pipes and if they are in good condition. If the person who cleaned for her didn't find cracks, I would think there's a pretty good chance that she's going to get good news. And it doesn't cost a lot of money to have somebody come in and use their fiber optic equipment to check the sewer. So I would do that. Let's actually get a view of what is there. And the person who takes a look at can probably also advise her about how frequently things may need to be cleaned, if there's scale problems or if there's anything else going on, so that she can avoid the great expense of replacing sewer pipes.
Yeah. Yeah, makes good sense. Tony, thank you for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Lydia in Mount Horeb, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Lydia.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a garage that was built about slightly more than 30 years ago of cement block. And one side failed 24 years ago, and another side now has failed, and the wall is bowing. It's partly below grade, partly above grade. And what we had done before was to put in rods that extended into the ground and then plates over that. And we're thinking of doing that again. And one option is to take out all of the soil from that side and straighten the wall and then replace it. Hmm. What do you suggest?
Now, Lydia, is this an attached garage, I'm assuming? It's part of the house?
Well, there's a walkway from the house to the garage. I mean, you know, a brick walk.
It's not connected directly to the house?
It's not attached to the house. It's part of our, and there's a loft above the garage, which is accessible directly from the deck, you know, so we could, a storage loft.
So basically what we've got is we've got below ground and above ground concrete masonry units or concrete blocks. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's very hard without seeing something to, you know, to give good advice here. I think the first thing to do is probably talk to a knowledgeable mason, and there are several in Madison who really do know what they're doing. Very frequently, we've really changed how we do block walls. We add a lot of reinforcement and things, and we do put a lot of rods in. We also have horizontal stiffeners and other things that go into walls, because the walls that were put up before, say, about 1980, during the 50s, 60s, and 70s, have a pretty high failure rate. And the Uniform Dwelling Code now tells us exactly how we want walls to be constructed or reconstructed because of all the failures that we've had. So I would start with a good local mason, somebody who has done restoration work in the past, and then if they do the work, we want to make sure that they reinforce it correctly. And I think you already know about that because you're talking about the rods. And we want to make sure we follow the Uniform Dwelling Code so that whatever you put up then is going to last for 100 years. Does that make sense, Lydia?
It does. We've already talked to a company that, you know, is not local. They're from Menasha.
That's a long way to come.
It is.
Yeah. Well, there are good local companies in Madison, and I would maybe check with a couple of them because, I mean, that's a 2-hour drive back and forth from Menasha, which is a long ways. And since we've got good people right in your neighborhood, and it's always a good idea when we've got something that's a little complicated to talk to three contractors, because they are going to have different ideas and they are going to have different prices. And you don't select the cheapest. You select the one who seems to you to be the smartest and is giving you the best warranty.
Yeah, that makes sense. Good luck, Lydia. Thank you so much for calling. John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Always great to have John come by. Jane Rotunda, our producer, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, and Tyler Ditter is our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest, John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. He His firm is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. They consult on restoring and adapting older homes and other buildings for new uses. And we are taking lots of callers online. So let's go right back to the phones and to Dave in Hartford. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. We have a home that's about 2 years old, and we have bees, yellow jackets, that are coming in between the siding and the vinyl windows on the outside. And my question is, can I caulk between the window and that vinyl siding around on the outside of the window?
No, you should not do that. Vinyl siding is what we call a rain screen. So water gets behind it, and it needs to drain out. So if you look at the bottom of your vinyl siding, the little narrow lower edge, you're actually going to see holes about every 2 to 4 feet for it to drain out. So if the yellow jackets are coming in, you've got wind coming in your house also. So it would appear that what is happening, bugs are bigger than wind. So you're probably getting some drafts in the winter as well. You need to have a vinyl siding installer come over there, pop off some trim around a window, and see if the window or the window flanges are actually sealed to the weather-resistant barrier. Now, the weather-resistant barrier in your house could be foam, like the blue or the pink Dow or other foam, or it might be like a Tyvek house wrap. But if they forgot to tape the windows and those hornets are coming in, you're getting winter drafts as well. So I would consult with a good local siding guy, have him take a look at it. If this house is only 2 years old, was this a custom-built house or did you buy it?
No, it was custom-built, and I know they taped the windows because I watched that, and they used Tyvek also.
It's very unusual that we're getting insects in if the windows are adequately taped. Now, it's possible that they've missed some lower corners or something, and that is the spot where insects come in because you've got the vertical flange and the horizontal flange, and they don't come together. There's a gap there. So I would talk to your contractor. If this was a custom home, you've got five – I don't want to give you legal advice here, but what the attorneys tell me, if it's a custom home, you've got either 5 or 6 year warranty on that house from the date of the sign of the contract. So ask him to come in, check that window, and we must have a penetration someplace because I don't think that the wasps are going to be eating through Tyvek. Now, I could be wrong. This who knows? Maybe the wasps are eating through the Tyvek, but I've never seen that happen. So talk to your contractor first, Dave. He does have, even though the house is up and it's been 2 years, he does still have some responsibility towards you.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Dave, for calling. Appreciate it. Kim in Conover, we'll go to you now. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I live in very far northern Wisconsin. I'm about 20 minutes south of the UP border, so we get a lot of snow, and my husband wants to put on a metal roof this summer, and it's an ungodly quote, as you might imagine. So I guess I just want to know, are there any drawbacks to the metal roof besides the cost that we should be considering? And then also, I currently have a couple of skylights in my bathroom that are leaking with the old roof, and I've heard that skylights in northern Wisconsin are not a good idea, and I just wanted your idea if I should remove the skylights when I put on the new roof, or if you don't see any issues with having skylights where I live. Thank you.
A good metal roof is a great thing. Now, they don't fit all houses. It is really a problem sometimes retrofitting old houses, especially if it is a house, let's say, from the teens or the 20s, where the roof is a little bit deformed. So you've got to make sure that everything is pretty straight and true before you try to put a metal roof on. When you put on a metal roof, you're going to spend a lot of money, as you already know, because you want one that has hidden fasteners, not just like the egg-type building where they just screw it down into the wood below. You can put snow guards on, like over your front door and things, so that you don't have huge cascades of snow coming down and hitting you. But the metal roofs are great. I have absolutely no problem with skylights in Wisconsin. The thing that you need to do is you need to make sure you've got good glass in it. And remember that there are literally 10 types of glass you can order in a skylight, from much better insulated to much worse insulated to good heat mirror glass to glass without any heat mirror. So if the skylights you have are sort of older and cheaper ones, you may want to replace them. There is no problem at all with integrating a skylight into a metal roof. Be very careful of the contractor that you hire for the metal roofs. I'm working on one right now where the roof is $110,000, and once we tear it off and put it on a second time, it's all going to be fine. A complete disaster. So we always tell people, be extremely careful when you hire contractors, especially if you're hiring somebody for something as expensive as a metal roof, something that you expect to last a minimum of 50 years and maybe 100.
$100,000. Oh, my goodness. That's a big mistake. Oh,
yes. Yes. A very big mistake.
Good luck, Kim. Thanks for calling. Kate in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Kate. Kate, are you there? Well, let's take a... Well, maybe she'll come back. Let's go to Terry in Roberts. Emailed, she'd like to downsize and build a garage with a apartment living space above it. It would be in the country on a lot, not in town. She thinks her county zoning is okay with this, but how does the plumbing not freeze?
Well, if you are doing, we call these ADUs, auxiliary dwelling units, and the plumbing that goes, now sometimes they'll put in a separate plumbing service, but if Terry's out in the country, Larry, I suspect she's on a well. So what we're going to want to do is we're going to want to make sure that we are frost-proofing the plumbing pipe that is carrying the water to the house as well as the waste pipe. Now, again, I suspect they're in the country, and they're going to have to talk to the county as to whether their septic system will accept an ADU. So we're going to have to start with some research at the with the township or the county, whoever is managing the approvals for zoning and septic systems. So get started there, and then everything you do will basically, if we follow the Uniform Dwelling Code and the various plumbing codes, electrical codes, everything should turn out fine.
Okay. There you go, Terry. Kate in Green Bay. Let's go back and see if we can get Kate up. Hi, Kate.
Oh, okay, thanks. I'm calling because we have a 50-year-old home with a poured basement, and we've been having diagonal cracks on at least two of the walls. The other two walls are covered by paneling, and we're in a floodplain. We've lived here 35 years and really have had no flooding, some leaking a little bit in the cracks when it rains hard. We've already replaced the gutters, and that helped. But we still get leaking when it rains hard. Our soil is very heavy, and there's very little grade to our house. It's indiscernible, really. So I'm wondering where we should start with fixing the problem, because we don't want to abandon the house. I don't think we'd be able to sell it.
Everything is fixable, Kate. Kate, let me ask you one quick question here. Now, these diagonal cracks, are these old cracks, or are these something that have developed in the last couple of years?
They developed probably about 20 years ago when we had somebody come in and put cement blocks in the window well to close up
wells. Good. That's good news. So it probably was caused by an impact of some sort, and this isn't like a heavy clay soil. It's actually cracking the walls. So I think what we can do there is we can consult. There are basement specialists out there now, and we have a whole variety of ways of fixing basement cracks. It is amazing what we can now repair with things like carbon fiber and the new adhesives. Now, some of them are franchises. Some of them are standalone companies. There's one in Madison that's been doing it for almost 50 years. And a lot of them will give you a 10-year warranty on the structure. And sometimes we inject
structural epoxy into the crack and glue the wall back together. Sometimes we go over it with a carbon fiber mesh that is incredibly strong. So there are basement specialists out there, and hopefully there's one in your area or two or three, and you can have them come out and take a look at it. In a flat area, we want primarily to make sure that this is structurally sound because, you know, a little water in the basement is what happens in 90% of the homes in Wisconsin, and making them completely dry is really expensive. I mean, we can make anything completely dry, but it is expensive. So look up basement repair specialists on the internet in your area and see how many people there are that would be willing to come out and consult with you, because the nice thing about this industry is it's so big and it's so busy that that is all they do. So in other words, they are indeed specialists. But as I said before, always check the warranty, check the references on the contractor before you let them in the house. And read the contracts very, very carefully. Whenever you do anything, read the contracts very, very carefully.
Does that help, Kate?
It is a big help. Thank you.
And when you're looking at a contract, are there some little tricks or things to watch out for that you don't want to see in a contract, John?
Well, there's some big tricks, Larry. I dealt with a $1.2 million house here in Madison that was structurally unsound. The people who signed the contract to have the home built for them agreed to arbitration if there was a dispute. And arbitration is a good idea. They didn't note the part of the contract which said that all of the legal fees for all of the attorneys and the arbitrator would be paid by them. In other words, they had to pay the contractor's attorney.
Oh.
What a disaster. Now, fortunately, the contractor was such a thief that the arbitrator ruled against him and said he couldn't collect attorney's fees and gave these people money. But there are very, very unfair contracts out there that are legal in the state of Wisconsin. So read your contracts carefully. Now, when you get into things like home additions and building a new house, Larry, that's where it's really problematical. You know, your local plumber, I'm not too worried about that. Even your local electrician, they'll use some pretty standard forms. But when you start spending $100,000, if you have concerns about the contract, you send it to an attorney and have them take a look at it. Because I am seeing contractors out there that if the people understood what they were signing, they never would have signed those contracts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so word of warning, something to watch out for.
Right.
Nancy,
protect
yourself. Nancy from Mount Horeb just bought a 150-year-old home that has been used as a seasonal cabin for the past 50 years. They're trying to make usable year-round space here with insulation and a permanent heat source. Blown-in insulation has been recommended for both the attic and walls. Is this a good way to go, or what should they know? I hope she was listening earlier in the show when we started talking about some of this.
Yes. A 150-year-old building is really complicated. Now, Nancy isn't on the line to tell us what type of building this is. So I guess what we're going to do, Larry, is we're going to assume it's a frame-walled building, which probably means it's balloon-framed. And we can really cause some problems when we insulate the walls of those buildings unless we know what we're doing. So she is going to need to talk to an insulation contractor that knows about condensation. Because what may happen with year-round? Now, this was, you know, a cabin, Larry. You're not there all the time. You know, you're not making jam, cooking spaghetti, boiling down tomato sauce. You're not producing a whole lot of water vapor that's going to go into the wall. But once you start living there, you are. And what we've found when we insulate the wall of an old building is that we have changed what's called the first condensing surface, or the place where the droplets of water form, to the backside of the outside sheathing. So that gets wet, and then we've got these old iron or old steel nails, and it's balloon framed. And once those nails start rusting, the whole building can be structurally compromised. If you own a historic structure that is on the Department of Interior National Historic Site list, you cannot insulate the sidewalls unless you do very careful air sealing and vapor barrier. So Nancy's going to have to start doing some research. She's going to need to talk to somebody. Unfortunately, there are a couple people in the Madison area that really know what they're doing. But she's going to need to talk to some consultants so that she does not end up with literally a moldy mess of walls on her hands.
Lots to consider there. Mary emailed to ask if you have recommendations and maybe information about classes on home building, or either online or live, and maybe a book recommendation would be welcome too.
Boy, that is really a good question. I wish I had an answer for it. Unfortunately, I don't. But, you know, in sketching just the little thing out for this program for you, Larry, I was saying to myself, I wish I had time to write a book. I don't know if anything is out there, but, you know, with our listeners, Larry, somebody probably does. But most certainly, there are tremendous issues and lack of knowledge about what we are doing overall. However, in particular, we have a lot of information. So if you're putting up a brick wall, we've got the American Brick Institute standards. If you're putting on thin veneer masonry, we have the Veneer Manufacturers Association standards. We have all kinds of standards for any kind of siding you want to put on. You want LP smart side? There's beautiful discussions of it online available for free from the LP site. Or if you're doing hardy plank, the same thing. If you're doing eaves, you can go to Drive It, you can go to Stowe, and wonderful big diagrams and pictures so we know what we're doing. So we can educate ourselves about the elements that are going into the house, because almost everything now comes with a good engineer-approved installation instruction. But it is that problem of how do we deal with the general contractor? How do we oversee this? And there, Larry, at this point, I don't know of a good resource. So this is where what we're really reliant upon is hiring people who are really good at what they do, people who are honest, people who are fair, and people who are knowledgeable.
John, I was thinking about your own website, educatedhomeowner.net is that website.
Mm-hmm.
You have information on there, and, you know, some of the places you mentioned, for example, maybe you've got links to some of those. I haven't been on your site for a while, so I'm not sure exactly what you've got there.
We do have a lot of stuff, but again, Larry, it's what we've got is, you know, you can go to masonry and you can get all kinds of stuff on how masonry is to be installed, but that doesn't tell you how to build a house, you know, how to coordinate, how to put it together. Now, there is another resource out there called the American Institute of Architects, and here in Wisconsin, we've got the Wisconsin Institute of Architects. They have things called model contracts. One of my favorites is a contract called the 801B. Agreement between owner and construction manager. What is nice about that contract, Larry, is you can put an addition on your house or you can build a 50-story building using it. But it lays out all of the steps as far as design, initial budgeting, value engineering. You know, where we find out we're $100,000 over budget. And so some of these things are available from the AIA or AIA Wisconsin. There are also contracts in there between the owner and a contractor. So if you're a local plumber, you know, out in the middle of northern Wisconsin, does everything on a handshake, and you want a contract, well, you can actually go to the AIA or AIA Wisconsin and download or purchase a copy of these model contracts. So that at least is out there. I don't have those on the website because they're copyrighted.
Ah, gotcha. John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement today. What kind of problems do you have with your home? Or do you have some plans to do some remodeling? John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Great to have John back. Larry Mueller here. We have many callers online, so I think we'll go back to the phones, John, and take a call from Matthew in Warren, Illinois. Matthew, hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I live in an 1880 farmhouse that was obviously built on some sort of a peat rock piers originally. And then sometime many years ago, they dug out the basement, actually going down to bedrock. So we have very shallow soil here, and put up a hollow concrete block walls. And I have a bit of trouble with radon, so I had them break up the floor and put in a drain around the perimeter going to a sump. But I'd also like to paint the walls with something to help stop either any vapor, but also any moisture from coming in. I don't really have water pouring in the walls, but they get damp. And I wanted to put something on there to seal it, and everybody has their own magic formula, and they all argue about what they'll stop and what you do. And I wanted to know, is it worth doing? And if I do it, how do I want to treat these concrete block walls before I put paint on or seal it?
Yeah. Really tough question, Matthew. It's a real challenge. There are a lot of block treatments that work as long as you paint it on the outside of the wall, where the vapor pressure pushes the paint or the sealant tight against the block. If you've got a lot of vapor pressure and you put a paint or sealant on the inside where the pressure is pushing against it, it's just going to push it off. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't worth doing. So one of my favorite products is a product called ThoroSeal, T-H-O-R-O-S-E-A-L, available at almost any local brickyard, probably a lot of lumber yards. And what this is a silicate-based paint, because you do not want to use anything that has something that mold will grow on in a damp basement. So you mix this up as either a putty or a paint, and it's usually a good idea to add a bonding agent so it sticks, you know, something like Acryl 60 or Elmer's or others make it. And what I do then is I'd simply rent a power washer, borrow one from a friend, and lightly power wash the walls, and then go ahead and mix this stuff up and put it on. Now, where you've got a lot of vapor pressure, it is going to pop it off. But at least that's going to tell you where you got the vapor pressure. And if it's all at the northwest corner, you can go out there and go, oh, that downspout's really close to the house. I'm going to extend that. So you can get some information out of it. It is not going to stop all the water vapor, and it's not going to stop the radon. What is going to help. And primarily what we have to think about in our basements is we really need to dehumidify. We really need to keep that basement below 45% humidity. And so that is something well worth doing. Making sure that your basement is integrated into the house HVAC system so there are some air changes can also help. So then the summer when you're running air conditioning, it helps dehumidify the basement. And then have you tested for radon since you put in your perimeter system?
No, because I just got it put in. I haven't put the actual radon fan in yet.
Okay.
They just finished a couple of months ago putting in everything in the sump. And I thought before I did anything else, it might help to seal the wall a bit. But, you know, some people say you can block it, and some people say you can't. But with all this mixed information out there, I thought I should ask somebody else.
Well, the paint is going to help a little bit against radon, but it really depends on how much radon is in the soil underneath your house and the types of air changes that you have in the basement. Because, you know, unless you dig up the exterior and put, you know, grace pre-proof under the floor and do all kinds of things that no one can really afford, it is really hard to stop all of the radon. Now, a collection system with a through a sump with a perforated drain tile can do quite a bit. I always suggest to people that after they have the system in that they do a 6-month alpha tracker test kit just to make sure that they've got it right. And if they don't, then we can put in mechanical ventilation like an energy recovery vent system or a heat recovery vent system so we can air change increase the air changes in the house and the basement. So it is pretty complicated. I think if you want to try the ThoroSeal, I don't think there's anything on their website that talks about radon. It will have some information about vapor pressure. And the thing is, it's non-toxic. It doesn't grow mold. It'll make your walls look nice and white. So even if it doesn't stop all of the radon, and it's certainly not going to stop all the moisture, it's going to achieve something for you.
All right. There you go, Matthew. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
No, I just asked Matthew if that would, if that covered it.
Oh, does that help, Matthew?
Oh, it helps a lot. Yes, I guess my question is, if you're power washing the basement, do you end up with a swimming pool when you're done, or do you, how much water do you end up in the basement when you're power washing?
Quite a bit. Yeah, quite a bit. But you've got the sump pit, right? Do you have a floor drain run into the sump pit?
Yeah, we put in a floor drain while we were doing this, and we actually, the floor drain goes separately outside and daylights so that if the sump fails, I at least can't get up above an inch or so of water in the basement.
Real smart design there. So, yeah, you're going to have a whole bunch of water in your basement, but you squeegee it out, and you have to run a dehumidifier for a few days or put fans in the windows for the air change or something so that you can get the place decently dried out before you put the ThermoSeal on those walls. And there are other types of silicate paints out there also, K-I-E-M, Kim or Chem, however that's pronounced. But you could go online and just research silicate-based paints for concrete block and see what works the best for you and see what's also carried in your local area there.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take another call. Marie in Mount Horeb will turn to you. Hi, Marie.
Hi, guys. My family and I just bought a farm on the historic register. It's obviously old. I would guess the farm is from the late 1800s, 1880s, 1890s. I've never owned a house on the National Historic Register, and I guess, you know, we've got some just like electric, I need a new septic system, there's all these little things that need done. Do I need to be checking in with the Historic Register for certain things and not for other things?
You should check in for everything. And so what you're going to want to do is go to wisconsinhistory.org or just Google State Historic Society, because that's what it is. And then when the page opens up on the far right, there's a little green button, or it has a green outline that says historic homeowner information or something like that. Click on that and then read everything on the site. So what you're going to find is you're going to find there are certain restrictions on what you do, certain things they don't want you to do. You're also going to find that there may be, if this is a contributing house, tax credits. So when you're doing your new furnace, your roof, repairing the windows, repairing the doors, structural repairs to the basement foundation, rewiring, that you are going to be eligible for a 25% tax credit from the state of Wisconsin. So go to that site and research. You will also find the email address of the person who is managing your part of the state, and that just changed over because the woman who was there took another job with the society, and I don't even know the name of the new person, but they are extremely helpful. So wisconsinhistory.org, click the button, do a whole bunch of reading, look at all of the forms, and help yourself to the tax credits and maintain your historic house correctly.
Very good. Marie, that probably saved you a bunch of money right there. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Pete in Reedsburg emailed that he's seeing reports online about COVID-related shortages of certain building products, such as lumber and sheet products like drywall, OSB, and plywood, leading to some enormous cost increases for homeowners. Is this something you've seen, or is it overblown?
It is not overblown. It is true. You have to think about all these lumber mills in, you know, Western Canada and Oregon and Washington, where COVID shut the mills down, or where they were on two shifts or down to one. So we are seeing some lumber prices at 300% of what they were pre-COVID. We're also finding terrible shortages. We're having problems with shipping. We've got problems with foreign factories. We have problems with domestic factories. So right now, it is awful. Now, that is going to change because we are getting vaccinated in the United States and the rest of the world as well. And, Larry, if you owned a lumber milling company out in Oregon right now and the local guy was offering to pay you 300% of what you usually charge by a 2x4, my guess is you'd rehire everybody you had plus some more and run 3 shifts because there's a lot of money to be made right now in supplying construction materials. So that is going to cause the prices to drop. We are probably not going to drop back to where we were pre-COVID because we are going to have a big building boom in the U.S. But I would expect that we will see a lot of prices actually drop in half in the next 4 to 6 months. So if you can postpone your project because the material prices are really high, that might be a smart thing to do. Good question. Mm.
Yeah. John Freiberger, our guest today of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Always great to have him stop by. He comes by every couple of months to talk with us. And he'll be with us up until 12:30 today. And you can certainly stay with us and join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. News next on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about home improvement with regular guest John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in evaluating older structures. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, they consult in restoring and adapting old homes and other buildings. Questions? I hope you'll join us with them. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And Jim in Appleton has a question or a comment, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
How you doing today, Larry?
Appreciate your call. I'm doing well.
Good. I'm just calling. I listen to your show every day, and all your guests are great. But this John, I've been in construction 64 years. Been around a lot. I have never heard anybody that sounds so incredibly credible in my life.
Wow.
I just absolutely want to just say, the people listening right now, if John tells you something, so far I've been listening for about 45 minutes, and he has not missed a beat with product lines, everything. I'm just absolutely blown away.
Well, Jim, I'm blushing.
John, yeah, that's pretty nice.
Oh, that especially for somebody in the industry who's been at it for as long as I have. I very much appreciate that compliment, Jim. Very kind of you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's hear what's on Diane's mind in Iron County. Hi, Diane.
Hi. We have a cinder block basement, and last year we bought paint specialized to paint the outside cinder block. It was part of it was already painted, so we moved the soil away from the house. We scrubbed and tried to get all the loose paint off, and we painted it. And almost everywhere we painted, except for our bilco door area, the paint is just coming off, and it took the old paint off with it, and we're wondering what to do.
Sure. Well, what happened, Diane, is when you added the second coat of paint, the first coat became, well, the combination of the two coats was no longer very breathable. And the thing about, as you mentioned, your blocks are hollow. So you get all kinds of vapor movement. So if the bottom of the wall is damp, well, that vapor moves right up the wall and then it tries pushing to the outside when it gets up above, and it blows the paint off. So this becomes a real problem. This is one of the big problems that we have, even when we're using the best possible products, such as the silicate-based paints. So I think I wish we had talked before you put the paint on, since you did all that digging. I guess that gets us right back to the theme of the program. Because what I would have suggested to you is that since you had that soil away, I would have put 1-inch foam against the exterior of that wall, and then I would have gone over that foam with a protective covering, you know, like an EIFS-type covering, exterior insulation finish system acrylic, or the cheap spread-it-yourself buckets of Portland cement that you can get at your big boxes. So that would have given us something where the vapor pressure would not have popped the paint off, plus it would have insulated that basement a little bit. So we need to think about these things. Vapor pressure, moisture, you know, we're in Wisconsin, and you're up in far northern Wisconsin. And we end up with tremendous pressures in houses in Wisconsin. So we need to really think about all of this before we get into it. So I don't think there's a lot you can do. You're not going to try to scrape all that paint off. So maybe think about using an adhered foam system. The other thing you can do is you can simply put on an EIFS system. They would come in and they would glue a mesh to it, and then they'd cover it with EIFS, and it would look really nice, and it should last just about forever as long as they use the heavy-duty mesh. So you probably want to talk to a specialist up in your area who does foundation insulation coatings and have them come take a look at it, and they're not going to charge you anything. Come over and look at it because they're looking for the work, but get some good advice from them. Hope that helps, Diane.
Yeah, Diane, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Stacy in Chicago, your turn. Hi, Stacy.
Gary and John, thank you so much.
Yes, so what's on your mind?
Yeah, so I have a 100-year-old house, and it has the brick basement. And, of course, with that, I'm sure, John, this is not going to be any surprise, or Larry, we have the efflorescence happening in those bricks. And like you said, we've had, you know, like three different contractors over to review it. And there's, of course, three different ideas and cost points to look at it. And I guess part of it is I just want to know, and just some other background information. We've had what we think the water issue has been removed, and we've put in new gutters, and all the water's being, you know, drained from the house. So we think we've taken care of the issue, but now do we have an issue in the basement with those bricks and some of them even crumbling? You know, and or I guess how do you know what the right answer is? You know, everything from very similar caller, removing the entire dirt and then replacing all the bricks even on the outside, or what?
Stacy, do we have any idea what type of brick this is? Are they sort of a salmon pink and sometimes yellow color?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so they're Chicago Commons then. They're IBCs or something like that.
Right, they're not the like the ones in Wisconsin. They're the reddish ones.
Right. It's the ones that were made on the south side till 1975, and they were used all over Chicago for absolutely everything.
Everything.
And they're highly permeable. It's a brick I absolutely love. I salvage them and use them all the time. So I still lay brick. But it is, yeah, they are a real problem because they're a very heavy form of sponge.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're getting efflorescence out of them, they are going to get badly damaged. So I think watch and wait is probably the first thing to do. You've already put on new gutters. You've corrected everything you can. Are you on a very flat lot, Stacy, or do you have some drainage?
There is some drainage. There's definitely some grade. So it's not going towards the house anymore.
Right. Yeah. The only way, if this is a full depth, now is I'm hoping that your house is a bit out of the ground. You've got 2.5 feet or so of brick out of the ground.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Good. Okay. All right. I've seen 1,000 of these in Chicago, so I'm envisioning it pretty easily. So that helps a lot because we are getting vapor drive on the part of the wall that is above the ground, and that moisture, just like in a concrete block, is soaking upward and going outward. So at this point, what I would do is probably just clean up the efflorescence, just brush it off, vacuum it off. All it is is calcium carbonate. It's not mold or anything hazardous to you. And then watch and see what happens. The only way that I know of actually stopping a water problem if it exists with this brick, is to dig up the exterior, put a peel and stick membrane on the brick, and then put, I would probably put 2 inches of insulation against it up to the top of the grade. And that is going to be expensive. So before we spend a bunch of money, let's see what you've been able to do to date. The nice thing about the brick is if you do have to replace some, they are available all over the place. They're usually 50 to 75 cents a brick. So you can fix it. So you've done a bunch of work. Let's clean up the efflorescence so we can see what happens in the future. Over many, many years, we are going to have a decline in the quality of that wall, but let's hope it's over many, many years, not over the short term.
Thank you.
Stacy, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, 800-642-1234. Lots of emails. Austin emailed that he has a 120-year-old home, and and the floors are pretty unlevel. His local flooring store said the only option for new floors is sheet vinyl. Is there a way to have the floors leveled out? And what kind of contractor does he hire for that?
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. We can make a lot of improvements on floors. And this gets a little complicated, Larry, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But basically, we have two things that happen with floors. One is we have the supporting structure under the floors that deteriorates. So that would be like the beams and the wood columns. So the floors follow those down. The second thing that happens is we have what's called deflection or bending, and that is in the floor joists themselves. We can also affect that. But everything we do has to be done over time. There's called this thing called durational deformation, which means something has changed shape over many years. What's happened is the wood fibers have actually bent in the wood. So your once straight board that came out of the lumber mill now maybe has got a 2-inch sag in it. By applying what we call a positive moment or upward pressure, we can rebend that wood, and we can actually do a pretty good job of leveling out floors. And we've done a lot of this on old frame houses, including some really big ones from the 1860s, 70s, and 80s. So what he's going to – I don't know where Austin lives, but he probably should start with a local engineer or an old house specialist. What they would do is they draw a – plans for the house, and he can do that himself. You use SketchUp or other software free online to draw plans of your house. You figure out where the loads are, you analyze it, and then you can come up with a beam and column system so that you can do a good job of salvaging that floor. And over a couple of years, by gradually tightening, you can get a lot of the bending out of those floors. So it is all fixable. It takes an intelligent person to work with you, and it takes some money and some time.
All right, there we go. Sandy emailed, they have poured concrete walls furred out with 2x4s. Should they insulate, vapor barrier, and then drywall?
They should not vapor barrier. That's not allowed in the state of Wisconsin because what it does is it traps things. Now, I don't know how dry that basement is. That is a big determining factor. They certainly can insulate. I would insulate with just plain old fiberglass or mineral wool bats, no craft paper, no vapor barrier whatsoever. What I have done in houses where we had to use the basement, or we developed this on a sorority building a long time ago where they had to use the basement study hall and chapter room, but there was no way to stop all the leaks, is we built our walls with a treated wood plate and steel studs. And then instead of drywall, we use a calcium carbonate and fiberglass board, the sort of stuff you see outside on commercial buildings. And then we put thin coat plaster over it. So basically we had a system where if you sprayed it with a fire hose, it wasn't gonna get damaged or get moldy. So there are ways of doing it. So talk to a knowledgeable local contractor, architect, or designer who know something about it and have them advise you as to exactly how to figure out how to frame and cover those walls. Whenever we're in a basement, we want to try to use stuff that is not going to grow fungus, because every basement I know of, Larry, that has
cellulose-based products in it has got fungal issues.
Good answer there, John. Let's go to Terry's email. His daughter has a 1938 frame house in Milwaukee. They recently had a tank water heater put in and no longer need the chimney. He's heard you talking about using the space to run heating ducts to the second floor, which they really need. Briefly, how is that done? Does the brickwork of the chimney have to be removed?
It doesn't have to be. I've got some contractors in the Madison area that can run a duct almost anywhere, and I've had them actually line chimneys. I like to get rid of the chimney, though. Part of the problem is, as we mentioned earlier in our opening, is the chimneys generally are a big source of air leakage. Plus, you've got to maintain the part that's sticking out of the roof. So I really like to just plain get rid of them. It gives you this nice hole in the house. So if you've got a house, even if you've got good heat ducts and things, you probably don't have high returns if you have an old house or the AC doesn't work. Well, so you can get high returns put upstairs for the air conditioning, and then you can seal it at the attic and insulate over it. And it isn't that hard to take chimneys out. Even big ones can come out. And most chimneys are the little 30-inch by 30-inch. You know, it's basically 2.5 or 3 bricks across. And you can get a local contractor to take those out fairly inexpensively. Or you can do it yourself as long as you're, you know, good with ladders and those sorts of things. So I think in 1938 bungalow, I'm assuming it didn't have a fireplace. So if the chimney could be removed, I would really think about removing it.
Yep. A friend of mine, Chuck Johnson, took his out brick by brick, did it on his own. But it was a really nice result when he was finished with it, for sure. Mm-hmm. Kay emailed, they have a 1977 two-story balloon frame house with original old-growth clapboard siding. Some needs repair, but most is still sound. All needs repainting, though. The contractor wants to tear off the wood siding and suggested LP smart side to replace it with. Borrow trim boards around the balloon of the walls. Apparently they are more rot resistant and want to use AZEK deck materials to replace a cedar deck as well. Thoughts on that?
Well, if we can repair the wood siding, you know, the nice thing about wood siding, if it's put on correctly so that there's only one nail in each piece of siding holding it to the stud, not two, so that the nail in the piece of siding above doesn't hit the piece of siding below, you can pull those nails and pop those pieces of siding out and put in new pieces. And remember, if we're replacing cedar siding, we want it to be primed on all sides. So I would probably avoid the huge expense if we only have some wood that's bad by simply replacing the cedar siding. If we are going to go whole hog on this, here's the theme of our program again, Larry. If we're going to take off all that siding and put on LP Smart Side, which is a perfectly decent siding, 90% of the time it's put on wrong. So if we're going to do this, we want to go to LP's website, and we want to download their installation instructions for the siding and the separate installation instructions for the trim, and we want to make sure the contractor has copies of that. I always suggest you print 2 copies and hand one to the contractor and wave yours in front of him so he knows you've got it. But if you're going to do that, 1977, we probably don't have a lot of insulation. I would think about putting an inch and a half, or 2 inches of foam on the exterior of that house. Analyze the condition of your windows at that time, because your windows are now 45 years old. So figure out what, as we said earlier in the program, what you want this house to look like in 10 years, and then come up with a plan. AZEK is the product I recommend most frequently for decks. I also recommend it for places where we may be too close to the soil with our siding, so we can use an AZEK as a weatherboard or something. AZEK is made out of PVC, Larry. Same thing as your sewer pipes. So AZEK is one of the few things where they say, yes, you can bury it. So it is a good product. The deck board is through color, so if you scratch it, it's still the same color.
So it sounds like our listener has done some initial research and has found some good products, but she needs to think about exactly all of the implications and all of the things one can achieve if we're going to actually replace all of that siding.
Yeah, good points. Deanna emailed to ask how to fix squeaky floors. She bought a house and pretty sure under the new carpeting is hardwood flooring. However, there are a lot of squeaky spots. Can those be fixed?
No. No, people have tried it. They put screws to the top. They put wedges underneath. It just doesn't work. The thing about our flooring is that it moves, and there's a reason the hardwood floor pieces are in generally little pieces, anywhere from an inch and a half to at maximum 6 inches wide with tongue and groove, is because the flooring is actually designed to move as our humidity and temperatures in Wisconsin change. So if we try fastening that all dead tight so it won't squeak, it's just going to break whatever we do anyway. Maybe take off the carpet and see if the floors are nice and have them resanded and stored. And you'll love them so much you won't mind the occasional squeak.
Yeah, that's my advice, too. And Deanna, speaking from experience here, I can tell you that over time, you will begin to notice the squeaks much less. because I have that same issue in my old 1906 four square home, but we redid the floors and man, they're beautiful. They're just beautiful. Well, Colin emailed. They live in a log home in the woods north of Chippewa Falls. Occasionally, smells musty inside, especially near the roof. They have a cathedral ceiling with dense packed cellulose insulation, so there isn't much ventilation. Everything seems to be sealed tight. But when conditions are warm and rainy outside, they get that smell. In a minute or less, can you answer that one, John?
I can, because this is one I've seen a lot. We love to have these beautiful high ceilings, these log cabins, and we find that they usually have significant air seal problems at that peak. I've had one that had 6-foot icicles, ice dam, which is actually condensation inside the building going out. So most likely there is an air seal problem up there. The best way to check that is to have an energy analyst or a very good home inspector come in. In the winter, we can use thermal imaging. In the summer, we need to use we need to pressure test, lower to 50 pascals. But you probably have a big air leak. That air is carrying wet moisture at the warmest part and wettest part of the house into the insulation, and the insulation is probably getting moldy. So a little professional advice is going to be needed there, but it's all very fixable.
John, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit. Again, appreciate it very much. Thank you, John.
Thanks,
John
Larry.
Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Always great to have him come by. And by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. Joel Karsten with us tomorrow on Garden Talk to talk about straw bale gardening. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.